Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller.
That's when it got wheels off. We started on and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off.
Devin Gilfillian, great songwriter, incredible performer, fantastic singer, sweetheart of a guy. I'm so glad I got to speak with him when the old 97s played with him about a year ago now. I was blown away. I'd heard about him and heard his stuff, but to see him live, and this is the case with so many of my favorite artists, to see him live is really just an eye-opening experience and really makes you appreciate the depth of his talent. Devin has gotten a lot of love from radio and the Recording Academy, and rightly so. He's the real deal. He joined me to talk about his new record that I think y'all are going to love. It's called Love You Anyway. Just came out a couple of months ago, and he's out hitting the road pretty hard. And his joy and his excitement and his enthusiasm are infectious, and they come through very much in this interview. I'm really glad I got to speak with Devin, and I think you're going to love listening to our conversation. Please welcome to Wheels Off the great Devin Gilfillian. Welcome to Wheels Off, Devin Gilfillian. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's so good to be here, Rhett. Thank you for having me, man. Thank you.
For the edification of our listeners, from where are you logging in?
I'm like basically Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in Madison. It's like, you know, a little small town, like kind of above East Nashville, but it's Nashville. Yeah.
I grew up in Dallas, which is we played together there not too long ago. When Dallas is that thing where all the towns that used to be outside of Dallas are now just parts of Dallas. I feel like Nashville is doing the same thing.
Absolutely. And Nashville's easy. It's so convenient. It's so small too. Like I'm 20 minutes from downtown, you know, and you know, when I was in Philly, like I grew up outside Philly. Like 20 minutes outside of Philly, you know, but there's a difference there. Like I wouldn't claim Philly because like if you live in Philly, there's a difference in like, you know, the suburb, the vibe that you bring in the suburb. But here in Nashville, like Madison, like you're a Nashvillian.
How long have you lived there? Nashville area?
I've been here 10 years, about 10 years now.
Well, you've watched the transformation of Nashville.
I have, and it's crazy. I mean, I go on tour, I leave for, you know, a couple weeks, and then I come back, and there's like a new building that I haven't seen. But like over 10 years, it's truly grown and in good, great ways, and, you know, and but also kind of scary ways too, where I'm like, you know, I don't want it to grow too fast where artists can't move here and afford to live here, you know. Yeah. And that's when it gets a little worrisome, you know.
Congrats on the new album. It's great. Are you got to be excited that it's out?
I'm so like, you know how it is when you know you're waiting for your song baby to get out into the world, and then she's finally out, and it's a great feeling. It's beautiful, like getting to get reactions from people and hear it on the radio, and you know it's amazing. It really is.
I'm always fascinated by how people deal with the interim between something being in the can, mixed, finished, you can't mess with it anymore, and then it finally gets released, that 4 to 6 month window or whatever it is. How do you deal with that? Are you a wreck?
You know, I'm mostly excited. I definitely am a little stressed out. Like, it's definitely the most stressful period, I feel like, in that moment, because you're just like I feel like after everything's done and released, and you know the music videos are out and all the things, you know, that's when you're like, you're just like, listen, I'm done. Like, this is like, you can have it's yours, it's on your plate, like, enjoy it, like, we're not, you know.
It's funny, I think you're such a great performer, and I love watching you perform. I know there's a couple of sides to what we do. There's the songwriter recording, like the more creative element, and then there's the more performative element. Do you feel like those are very separate, or do they feel like they're just parts of the same job?
You know, I mean, they're definitely parts of the same job, but they are different. In, you know, like the songwriting process, the creation process, like in the studio, is such a, like, it's that's like the for you, like, that is, it's for you in a different way than the performance part is also for you, but it's mostly for the people, you know. It's to show the people, to share this thing that, you know, was for you with everyone else. And in order for, you know, for it, there to be a thing to share with everyone else, you have to, that, you know, that writing process, the creation process has to be so, like, honest, you know. And that's why, like, people, when you perform your songs, like, you know, they can tell, like, oh man, like this guy, this girl, whoever, this artist, like, they were in their room, like, really, like, just digging into themselves, like, really reflecting, really going in, and I can feel that. And so they're connected, of course, but yeah, like, I don't know, like the writing, I do love the writing process, but I'm falling more and more in love with performing, you know. The more I do it, the more I go out and see other people perform at, like, insane high levels. And, like, I was at Bonnaroo and got to see Hayley Williams from Paramore, and oh my God, like, wow, just inspiring, you know.
Well, that's the fun part too. In it, you know, in opposition to all the schlepping, what was it Roseanne Cash said when I talked to her? She said, they pay you for the 22 and a half hours a day you're not on stage.
we're truckers, basically, you know.
Long haul. So you, with the new record out and you're out working it and promoting it and all that, do you already have something that you're thinking about, a next creative project, something that you're working on?
You know, I'm kind of like writing a little bit here and there, not as much, but I've been in the well filling stage right now. Like, I haven't been, like, I'm always pushing in my brain, like, you know, thinking about what the next sound, what the next vibe is going to be. And, you know, it's always getting a little bit weirder, and you know, I've been playing on my SP 404 you know, making some weird drum beats and stuff. So I'm like, man, okay, how can I get this into the, you know, like I'm just in play mode right now, you know, just in like tinker around. But nothing, I haven't gone into serious writing mode yet.
Yeah.
But
well, you're still playing with house money. You got a new record out. You're good. Nobody's expecting, nobody's harassing you yet.
Yeah. Right. When's that next kid come? Oh, when you're going to have a little brother come and your little sister come for your record.
do you remember when you were growing up outside Philly, do you remember there being like an epiphany moment for you where you knew it was always going to be music? This was your thing.
You know, I feel like there were like two little epiphany moments. There was one when I was in, I want to say, sixth grade, and we had to do research on what kind of career we wanted to do when we were kids. And I was like, man, like I wanted to be like Pharrell, you know. I wanted to make beats. I wanted to be a producer, and so I looked up, you know, what a music producer makes, and it was like $45,000 a year. And I was like, what? Hold up, man. Pharrell definitely makes more than that. Like that can't be. Are you sure? And then I was like, all right, like that's fine. And then I was 14 and I picked up guitar, and then I that was, you know, the moment I heard Jimi Hendrix, I was like, oh my God, like this is, the guitar became my path. Like I was like, I am a guitar player, you know, and that I wanted to do that. And I didn't even look at myself as a singer really until like confidently until after high school and in college when I was singing, accompanying myself on guitar, just singing at bars for like 3-4 hours doing acoustic cover sets and stuff. And you know, kind of like getting more confident as a singer. And so like I would say 14 years old, like when I heard Jimmy, I was like, this is what I want. Like I need to learn how to make all these sounds like somehow, like, and this is just, I didn't know music could be like this. And then I just kept going. I'm all over the place now, you know. It's funny when you're a kid, like I was in high school just like nothing but classic rock, nothing but Jimi Hendrix, nothing but Zeppelin, nothing but AC/DC, anything that doesn't have guitars is stupid, you know. Then you know, but before that I was like hip-hop, you know, listening to Pharrell, and at the same time I was listening to hip-hop and like even Kanye and you know, before he lost his whole mind. And poor Kanye, he's, you know, listen, it's sad, but anyway. I love it all though, but yeah, 14 was like I think that was the big epiphany.
I always think about that, the finding of the voice, like the literal voice, not your metaphorical voice as a writer, but your voice as a singer. And do you go back and listen to early recordings and you can hear how far you've come? And you, I like, sometimes I feel sorry for the kid when I do it, like my own self kid.
I listen back, like it's funny, I was like, you know, when you play, sometimes when you're writing you play voice memo roulette, and I just like kind of like scrolled all the way back to like 10 years ago, and I listened to like some voice memos of not, and I was like, man, all right, like that was not that bad, you know. I was like, that sounds pretty close to like what I'm doing now, but I've definitely absolutely grown. It's funny just listening to how much you've grown over the years, and thank God we're, you know, I've grown a little bit at least, you know.
I know for me, and I feel like I see this in other people, sometimes when you start as a singer, you're kind of self-conscious and you're trying to be something you think they want you to be. So like, for instance, when I was in high school, I made a record, I sang with a British accent. Embarrassing now, but it's, you know, I thought that's what you're supposed to do. Do you feel like there was a character or something you were trying to portray early on as a singer before you sort of found it for yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I feel like I kind of like borrowed little like bits and flavors and things from so many singers. And my dad, you know, his North Star was Stevie Wonder. So I feel like that became my first North Star, because he was always playing Stevie Wonder in the house. And so like I was always trying to sing like Stevie Wonder. And then there's Marvin Gaye, and then there was Otis Redding. And I was like, oh my God, I love Otis. And then there was like Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder. And I fell down this Pearl Jam hallway. And then there was like, I just like anyone's voice who I just like thought was cool, or like, and now Adele, like I was like, ooh, Adele, like her voice is crazy. Like anyone's voice who I was like, man, I like, there's this quality that in their voice that I just love, like the emotion, the struggle, this, like, you know, when I heard that in their voice, I was like, that is honest to me. That's like, that's real to me. And so that I was always constantly looking for that. And I feel like finally I kind of put together, you know, something, put together my own voice and with little bits and pieces and just with the machinery I was given, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I haven't heard somebody put it like that. That's a great way to say it. You put together your own voice. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as musicians, as artists, you know, we're just like all the influences that pour into us, and we are just the machine. This is the machine. This is the body that we're given. This is your voice is the instrument that we were given, and it's not going to sound. It's the thing. It's that's the fingerprint, right? You know, and if you can make that unique through all the influences too, and do something new with all those things, and that's what's interesting, you know.
My impression of you on stage and off stage is that you are intentionally positive. Like you project this really strong positivity. And I wonder for you, because I've never spoken to someone in the arts or really someone who's a human being, but specifically us artist types. I've never spoken to anybody that doesn't wrestle with some demons, some voices in your head, negative voices, internally generated obstacles. So I wonder for you, when you come up against that kind of stuff, what have you figured out as a strategy for getting past that?
Man, you know, I know whenever I'm struggling and know that I am slipping into the darkness, and you know, like I try to give myself a little bit of grace, and you know, and just be like, yo, you know, I know I had Taco Bell 3 days in a row, and I've been waking up at noon, and you know, it's been, you know, like, but like you can get back on track. I think that's the first step I take. And then I try to do the easiest thing that is productive, you know, that day, whether it's like make my bed, you know, or just eat something healthy for breakfast, you know, and try as hard as I can to start the day off right. And if I don't, then, you know, like just try and feed my body what it needs, and get rid of distractions, and like really get into my body. Meditate, like yoga is something for me that has saved my back and also my mind. So I think that's like, that's a huge thing. Like getting into your body and just like being present with yourself, and and reaching out to some people that you love too, if you're really, really in the dark spot, you know, and get them over here, get them over with some ice cream or some, you know, whatever, pizza, whatever gets you going.
It's funny, it comes up a lot, this idea that songwriters have to feed off of darkness. Like, we do better when we're in a bad place, if we've gotten our heart broken, or worse, if we're like struggling with a drug problem. You know, the idea is that from you talk about classic rock, you know, yeah. Growing up for me, I thought, well, geez, you know, you have to live like that to really be a real artist. It seems to me like you sort of feed off of something that's more the opposite, like a really positive kind of energy. I wonder, is that something that you thought about intentionally? Have you ever felt like you should be living a life that's more self-destructive or upsetting? Does that make sense?
I feel like all of my heroes were just self-destructive. Like, I mean, that's like, you know, Jimmy, unfortunately, yeah. Like Marvin, yeah. Bob Marley, yeah. All of my hair. So it's crazy. Like, I mean, as a kid, I'd read so many biographies too of you know, of Jimmy, of like Led Zeppelin, and like, you know, all of, and it's just like, I'm reading that and you're like, I just like, I don't know. I don't want to have to like go through a heroin problem to get to these good songs. Like, I don't think that's necessary. Like, especially, you know, Chili Peppers, like reading Anthony Kiedis's like that biography too. Like, I was just like, man, like, nah, like, no, thank you. Like, I'm good. Like, I might, I'll stick to just a little marijuana here and there, man. Like, that's all I need. Like, that's all we need here, y'all. Like, little mushrooms. Like, let's just stick to the natural stuff here. Like, and everything in moderation, and also seeing, you know, like Marvin, like, man, like, love song, like Marvin and Bob Marley, like, love, the best love songs ever written, you know, some of the best love songs ever written, you know, and I want, but like, when you look at their lives, it's wild. The relationships, there were definitely some rocky relationships, and stormy and messed up and abusive. And I don't want, you know, I don't want that to be, to me, I can't write love songs if I'm an abusive person, and I want my songs to reflect who I am as a human. And, you know, I think that to me is important. And I want to, you know, I also, like, today, everybody's looking at your whole life. Like, everybody sees everything that's going on in your social media. Everyone wants to watch your channel and like see who you are. And like, I think it's important, if we have this platform, to use it for good. And I try to be positive, but, you know, I also like keep it real, you know, when it needs to be kept real. And that's, I think that's important. And, I don't know, it's more fun that way for me.
Boy, it's great. I think you're about 20 years younger than I am, maybe more. And so I feel like my generation straddled the line between those eras. The old school classic rock debauchery, and then, but I really do feel like your generation, it's nice. I feel like you're demystifying the job of the artist, where it doesn't have to, you know, kids don't have to grow up thinking that they gotta, you know, shoot up to write a great song or whatever. So,
oh man, oh, absolutely. No, yeah, I think that's so important, you know, that, you know, what is cool, you know, to people now, and what is cool is, to me, is making the world a better place. And I feel like kids and the next generations coming up too are seeing that, and seeing that, like, doing drugs and getting messed up and like getting over a drug addiction problem, you know, it doesn't give you this medal to be a great artist, like actually trying your best to take care of yourself and so that you can make the world a better place is actually the new cool thing, you know, to do. And I think that's so important to promote as you know, as us as musicians now, as artists now.
I love that. Okay, so this is a lot of good wisdom already in here. I wonder if you would try and sort of sum it up. Imagine a 21-year-old version of Devin in today's world. What advice do you think you would give 21-year-old you?
21-year-old Dev, listen, man, stop chasing all the hearts out there. All right. Go, just practice more, practice your instrument more. And, you know, I mean, I think that don't be scared to say everything that you think is right. And don't be scared to be wrong, you know, and as far as like just using social media as a platform and, you know, using your voice. 21, man, 2011. That'd be 2011 right there, Devin, right there. And you know, like Barack was in the office, everything was all good, but bro, listen, it's gonna get crazy, all right? Like, just get ready. But it's all right, you're gonna be good. We're going to be good.
Do you remember when we thought like everything was headed inexorably in a good direction forever? That was so great.
It was, God, life was so like, wow. Wow. Life was so, so beautiful. When Barack was in office, it was like, man, nothing can stop us now. But hey, we're gonna fight the power, baby. We're gonna keep on fighting the powers and get it working the way we want it to work, hopefully.
It's ups and downs.
It's going backwards, but we're gonna try and just keep pulling it forwards.
Well, Devin, congrats on the new record. I'm so excited for you. I hope that you and I get to play some gigs together soon. And I think the world of you. Way to go. Thank you so much for joining me on Wheels Off.
Thank you, Rhett, so much for having me, brother. And man, I hope I get to see you soon too, brother. Take it easy. And I look forward to listening to this episode.
Woo! All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris. Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.